Welcome, everybody, back to Tales from the Core with Mike Francis, and joining us for a second time. I know it's Sergeant. I'm not going to fuck up to say Corporal this time.
Oh, don't demote me again. Jeez. The Marine Corps did that twice. Can't have Francis doing it.
So as you can tell, Sergeant Michael Sylvester, appreciate you coming back, man, making time.
I was hoping I would come back.
Last time was a blast. Everybody was loving it. And speaking of last time, thanks to your podcast.
I saw it.
I got that in the mail.
You got the donkey dick. All
right. I got the donkey dick as a gift from, I don't want to say his name because I don't know if like you can get in trouble for keeping that shit. But one of my former roommates who retired as a first sergeant, who loved that dude to death, went on to be a DI also.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will tell you, only place I have seen those is in the Marine Corps. So I don't know what that means. Maybe they're the only ones who have. So I didn't see anything.
Yeah. So a couple things that, you know, that we didn't talk about, you know, when we talked about it with most people, I know you talked about 2-8 where you were prior to the drill field. Yeah. But what was life? Like, what was life before the Marine Corps and what made you want to join the Marine Corps? We never got into that.
No, I mean, you're trying to get all deep on me. Like, geez, like, there's no story there, man. I come from a military family. My father served. My grandfather served. It was something that was always going to happen, I guess, at some point. I didn't join the Marine Corps initially. I went to college first. And then when that didn't work out, I said, all right, well, what am I going to do? I guess I'm going to enlist. Just kind of started from there. I mean, I didn't want to be infantry. Believe it or not, I didn't. But I wanted to do the sexy shit. So yeah. They were like, oh, well, I wanted to be like jumping out of planes and, you know, snooping and pooping with the cami face up. I wanted the whole poster, right? Back in the 90s, they had that poster, right, with the guy, the lieutenant, all camied up with the K-bar and, the rappel rope all strung over him. Like, yeah. That's the shit I want right there. And they're like, oh, well, you're going to go in infantry. I was like, well, I don't know if I want to do that. We'll just do infantry option. I don't know what the hell that meant. Let's do infantry option. And then if you want to go and do the high-speed stuff, then you can do that. I was like, okay, that sounds good. So I did that. And then I come to find out that the option is whatever the hell the Marine Corps wants. So I could easily have been a 41 or a 31 or a 51. That's infantry options. They just pick what 03 you're going to be. That's kind of how it started. I mean, SOI was a kick in the ass. I didn't want to do it. I wanted to get out at that point. Actually, that funny story, I went to, I think we were like 3 weeks in, and we were just humping. You know, back then, SOI was only for infantry, right? MCT was only for the pokes. You know, the non-grunts. Right. So it was like boot camp. You had a week off, and then you were back at SOI for like another 8 weeks, 7 or 8 weeks back then, in the mid-90s. I remember I didn't want to do it. I was like, hey, I'm out. I'm not doing this. So I told the instructors, they're all a bunch of sergeants, right? You want to be DIs. They're all, you know, leasing me up. And then, hey, you're going to go talk to the master sergeant. So I walked over to, this is like Camp Geiger. I walked over to, I don't know, some admin office. And Master Sergeant was in there, and I'm sitting. I mean, there was a female Marine checked in. You can have a seat right there. It's the corporal, right? Just sit right there, trying to be a tough girl, right? So I'm just like, all right. I'm just sitting. Kind of had me waiting there for like 4 hours. Finally, he comes limping back in. He had a limp. He's like, hey, yeah, you're here to see me. He's like, so what's your problem? I was like, I don't want to be in the infantry, Master Sergeant. He's like, what do you mean? Well, my contract says infantry option. He's like, devil dog, do you have any idea what the hell that means? I was like, yeah, I guess it's my choice. No, 100%, not your fucking choice. You don't want to be in the infantry. I can't recall anything that he said to me. I just know how it made me feel. And it made me feel this fucking big. I was like, all right. He pretty much challenged me, called me every name in the book, just took my nuts, literally took my nuts right out of my body and put them in his pocket. Like, I got them. I guess I got to get those nuts back. So kind of started from there, but there really wasn't much of a story before that. You know, I went to school in West Virginia, believe it or not, didn't work out. And joined the Marine Corps.
I know. I mean, it's interesting because how we all get there. I know there's lots of dudes that go that route. I met some crazy fucking guys, man. One dude, once I got fapped out to Stone Bay, he had got felony charges for poaching elk in Washington State.
Okay.
And the Marine Corps was his way out. It was the Marine Corps prison for fucking poaching elk. So
I don't know if it's interesting. I don't know if these, I mean, when I went through there, because, you know, in the mid-90s, they had the thing called cohesion, right? Which is something
right.
They kind of took through it. So anybody you went to boot camp with, if you're 03, you stayed with that. So everybody that was 03 with me, they all went to 2-8. So we stayed.
No shit.
Yeah. A lot of them got out, you know, in 2000 when the contract was up. But I stayed in. I already, a few re-enlisted. But then once you re-enlist, you kind of disperse, right?
Right.
You know, we had a couple guys that were in there that were, you know, some kind of felony conviction. You see, either join the Marine Corps or go to prison. And it was, you can easily tell which ones were which.
You know, it's crazy. Like,
I didn't have any of that when I was a hat. I didn't see any of that. Maybe that was happening. I just didn't have any of those. But I didn't have any recruits that were felons. Well, they probably were felons, but they weren't forced by the court to join the Marine Corps or go to prison.
Right. Yeah, that's crazy shit. It's interesting though, you talking about SOI. There was another guy who was on here. I'll, you know, tell you afterwards, but he was telling me about his SOI experience. And it just from my understanding, and I don't feel like this is talking shit. This is maybe just the way things were, but my understanding was back when you guys went through, the guys who were in SOI kind of, it wasn't a B billet like it became. It was the ones that maybe didn't need to be in the infantry anymore.
So, and I remember hearing Strong say that too. And maybe that was the case. I mean, he was West Coast, so.
Yeah.
They did shit a lot of different on the West Coast. But I know most of the instructors, they were all sergeants. None of them were Turks, by no means. They were all, the sense I got, and I kind of found out afterwards that it wasn't the case, but. The sense that I got is those were the guys who wanted to be drill instructors. And you had to go do that before you could go be a drill instructor. Because okay. they would do drill, you know, like when you go out to the bush for a week and then you're back, you hump back on Friday afternoon and then you have the weekend off, right?
Right.
So once we got close to Camp Geiger, once we got close to base from the training area, now we had to, you know, lock up and we were marching in and they were like singing cadence and, you know, so that's kind of why I got that sense. But I found out later on that it wasn't even a hard B billet, it was a soft B billet. So I don't know if that was the case. I didn't see it. Most of the sergeants that were in my SOI class, they were tight. They were all good dudes. I didn't get a sense that it was kind of like the dumping ground for the infantry rejects. I did not get that sense at all.
Yeah, like you said, West Coast, East Coast. You know, I know I've heard a lot of differences.
Maybe things changed. I think Strong had like a year, maybe 2 years. I'm not quite sure when he went, maybe a year. So maybe things changed. I mean, they were changing a lot of things back in the 90s.
Yeah, and then.
Maybe it was like that for him, but not for us. I don't know.
And then when you guys re-enlisted, then the whole bunch of shit changed.
A lot of things changed. Yeah, a lot of things.
I feel like. I didn't ask you this. I'd like to ask a lot of people this, you know, because it's the question, right? Like, where were you when the moon landed? Where were you when the Challenger exploded? Like, everybody always wants to know. I don't think we asked you, like, where you were on 9/11.
I was in Kosovo.
Okay. I think we did, because I remember you saying yeah. Kosovo.
Yeah, I was on ship. I was on a med float on 9/11, and we got called into Kosovo. I think we were there maybe a few weeks. We're about to kick off an op, and we're sitting in the ORP. We're sitting there, and next thing you know, the radio starts blowing up. Get back. What the hell's going on? The lieutenant wasn't with us. The squad leaders would take the squads out, and we would have our own operation, right? So it was just me. I was the PL and the APL, right? And they're like, you got to get back here right now. Why? I'm sitting in the ORP right now. I'm about to move on the objective. They're like, nope. Get your ass back here right now. But, you know, I say it like we were doing something. We weren't really doing anything. It's Kosovo. It wasn't like combat. It was, you know, real people, real bullets. But we were looking for guns. We were like the UN police. That's what we were doing there. So we had like, hey, there's guns in that house. That was our objective, right? It wasn't like Iraq or Afghanistan, right? So we just literally just stood up in a tree line. The guy's looking at us, and they're just like, hey, well, we were going to come see you, but now we're going back this way. We just stood up and just walked back. And we got back.
There's a new objective.
Yeah, we got back to the FOB, and everybody was like all bustling around. And it took us a little while to get back because we were way out there. We got flown in, but we had to walk all the way back because they grounded everything.
Yeah.
Even overseas, they grounded us. So we had to walk back. It wasn't that far. It wasn't that bad. And like I said, it was Kosovo. It wasn't like Iraq, right? Although Kosovo is one of the heavily mined countries in the world. So we definitely didn't veer off the trails by no means. And when we got back, it was like everybody's running around. Dudes are screaming, like all pissed off. Everybody's waving a flag. Like, where did we get the flags from? Like, what's going on here? And then we found out. Yeah, the lieutenant came and told us. He said, hey, man, US is under attack right now.
Jesus.
Stand by. And then we got back to the boat, like, I don't know, maybe like 3 or 4 days later. We got back to the ship, and next thing you know, there's maps of Afghanistan everywhere. Like, that's where we're going. We're going to freaking Afghanistan. That's where we're going.
Yeah, it's just so. But then that's when you went to the drill field.
Yeah, what they did, because 8th Marines was slotted to be one of the first units in. And then I think 3-6, we were doing a tunnel with 3-6, and they did it early. They did it early because we were getting ready. We were at the end of our float, so they didn't want to extend us.
Right.
So, hey, we'll just do a turnover in rota, and then you guys will just go back and be a contingent force. Because, you know, once you come back, you're now the contingent force because you're the more trained, right? And during that time, we got back. I think it was in late October. Late October, and I was at the drill field in January. So I already had orders. And of course, I tried to cancel them. I'm like, yo, going to the first sergeant, you know, all former hacks. I'm like, listen, you know, we got to get these orders pushed back. I'm going to be, if we're going to war, this is, I've been waiting 6 years for this. I'm like, what's going on? You know, right. Or 5 years. Like, what's going on, man? Like, what are we doing here? Why am I going to the drill field? But hey, man, you can't. It's the orders. You got to go.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, I was a little, I had a little hair under my ass at that point, but you know, it is what it is.
I can only imagine, man. Cause I remember, you know, I got pissed off at like just kind of some of the bullshit field ops that we actually needed to do to prepare us to go. Like, I was like done fucking around. Like, let's stop fucking around. Let's just go. Let's go get in the shit. And there you guys are. You know what, 5 years of your Marine Corps career, and then finally everything that you've been, you know, doing this shit for, and now you got to sit this one out for a couple minutes. You know, we got to send you down to Paris Island.
Yeah, well, it kind of worked out too, because if I had waited and I pushed my orders off 2-8, they didn't even go in anywhere. I think until almost 2002 before they went in anywhere. I could be wrong on that, but I know. Because they were the first one that come back, they got right back down to the bottom. So all the other units deployed before them, but then you know, Iraq popped off, you know, in 2002, and they were the first ones into Iraq in March of 2002.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy. So I went to boot camp February of 2003, and I remember the drill instructors, man, and like this will probably stick with me for life, but I remember when we would be, you know, not cutting it, you know, maybe fucking off, being a little nasty, and they would come out at the end of the night and read off a list of the KIA in Iraq that day.
We used to do that. I mean, we did that. But as a hat, all the kill hacks. You know, hey, some senior who was there's always like a duty senior. I think there was one day we were at knowledge. We took him into the podium, the auditorium there for some knowledge. And he's like, hey, we're going to shake these boys up. We're going to tell them that they've all being deployed, like, right now. It was like, I think it was like training day, like 20. Like, they're not even halfway through. And they're like, hey, we're going to shake them up. And it was something that the seniors all kind of, you know, figured out for themselves. And we had a whole script what we were going to do, you know, because you sit by platoon. And usually the drill instructors are kind of standing behind you. And they're like, hey, they was the middle, they had a whole thing. It was like the middle of the class. One of the drill instructors on quota that was, you know, assigned to, you know, regiment there that was doing the class. He started like talking and kicking the class like he normally would. And all of a sudden he was like, drill instructor, can I see you for a second? And he, excuse me, recruits. And he goes, walks over, and it was like, you know, had some serious commander, you know, all this kind of talking like this. Yeah. He comes back and says, drill instructors, report. There was like a little office off the auditorium there. Report over to the drill instructor office. So there were no drill instructors in there. The recruits were by themselves for like 10 minutes. And they lasted for a while, just kind of sitting there, you know, just eyes locked, right? You know, sitting at attention. And then, you know, after we waited until they one of them started scratching his face. And then one was like this. And now they're talking, right? And then we ran in there. It's like, listen, grab your shit. Everybody stand the fuck up right now. And then they had a series of guns come out. One of the series of guns, gunnery sergeants came down. He's like, hey, recruits, listen. Right now, he had some script. It's like, by order of United States, of the President of the United States, all of you are now officially United States Marines. Grab your shit. We're leaving. They thought there was an airfield on Parris Island. They're like, hey, the plane is landing here. We're getting on a plane. We're going over to Afghanistan right now. And the recruits were just like, and there was one kid who was like, drill instructors, recruits, not infantry. You are now. That's what he said. You are now. Oh, it shook him up. It shook him up pretty good. We did that one time. I remember I was on my second cycle when we did that. My second
platoon. So it's crazy you bring that up because I was the side of golf company that was like facing towards the chow hall, not the parade deck, but the, you know, N-word. I don't know how the fuck you call it. And I don't remember exactly when it was. I want to say it was after the rifle range. You remember First Sergeant Zwoyer? Zwoyer, whatever his name was, the first sergeant of golf company. They had, I can't remember exactly who it was, if it was all the recruits or just the O3s, but they took us all over to like the top deck of the parade deck side. Cause I remember walking through that. You never walked through there. It was the first time we ever walked through there. It was just foreign lands. Right. And they told us all, and I, until now, I mean, they're probably fucking with us, but they told all the O3s, because that's when Iraq was kicking off. That was the invasion. Yeah. That now that you've hit the rifle range, be prepared. Like any moment we could call you and send you out to the fleet, and you're going to war.
They were still doing that, I guess, you know? And when were you there, 2003?
Yeah, February 03. So what rifle range is what, six?
I was still a hat in February of 03.
Yeah, you were Liebrook's receiving.
Okay.
DI.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I'll never forget that.
I don't remember them doing that. I would have remembered that shit. Oh man. But you know, I was on quota at the time. So I was on libo like all the time. It's great. So at the time I wrote that.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? It's interesting. I wonder how many other guys out there got some shit like that. Like, you know, Hamlet, Gaddis, those guys that are all kind of around the same time frame. So one thing that you brought up that was a great point is you said that, you know, when you were there, you guys were making Marines for combat because we were in a time of war. And so I got to thinking, I was re-listening to the podcast. So can you compare and contrast? I know it's a little bit different because you were a recruit when you went through and you were a DI, you know, like 02, 03. What was different? What was different from when you were in boot camp and what you experienced to wartime boot camp and how you were to prepare Marines?
Well, I mean, the only thing that was really different about it was everything that we were saying as a drill instructor was true. Whereas, you know, I thought back, like when I was a recruit, everything was just a hypothetical. Like, you know, they're teaching us how to do this, but we had no idea when the hell we were going to do it.
That's a great point.
When, you know, when I was a hat, we're teaching them to do it because you're actually going to go do this shit. You know, you're a crucible Marine, but, you know, when the BWT was different, you know, back then, And, you know, they didn't have like the Medal of Honor reading and putting the fucking planks, you know, like, we got to move this ammo across this river, you know, and you got to put these planks in certain places to get this. We didn't have that shit. It was all BWT, basic warrior training. It was all infantry shit. It was land nav. It was, they had the shell of the helicopter getting off of the helicopter, doing the Akio huddles. That's what we did. And then beat us humped, right? But everything was a hypothetical. We're trained to do this. We had no idea when the fuck we were going to do it. When we kind of, we as a drill instructor, we always tugged on. Like, we were doing a crucible. You know, that's time where you can relax. You remember, drill instructor had his soft cover on, right?
Yep, yep.
You know, talk to you guys, and, you know, it was a little bit more relaxed where they could come out and ask questions. And it was really simple. Anytime, hey, you assholes are actually going to go fucking do this. When you leave here, and for those of you who are 03, you're going to go SOI, and you're going to be in the shit in less than a year. In less than a year. So, and we always talked on that strength. Always. Like, during infiltration course, when they got, you know, especially night infiltration, because that really fucks with the recruit's head. You know, they got they're playing the scene from Saving Private Ryan when they hit the beach on the loudspeakers, and they got the audio simulators. We were just throwing them all over the place, right? And we would tell it, hey, listen, hey, asshole, you're going to be doing this in literally 6 months. You might want to fucking do it right.
Yeah, that's a fucking great point, man. It's funny sometimes the questions we ask, the answers are so obvious, but yeah, the shit you were being told with hypotheticals and the shit you guys were telling my generation was just that.
It wasn't hypothetical. It was real.
Yeah.
I never read any KIA or anything like that. I know, like, when I was at Heavy, trying to get them all jazzed up for a final drill, you know, I would do like news clips of the, you know, of some war correspondent of things that are happening in Iraq or Afghanistan.
Yeah.
I have like a bunch of clips that I forgot where I got them from. Another drone sort of gave them to me. And I would play the clips for them, like while we were doing drill, and I had it blasting. And it was all about Marines, you know, 4th Marines in Fallujah during Phantom Fury, you know, one. And if the news report was like, we're here right now, these Marines. And they could hear them. And the Marines are like all yelling and hooting and hollering, acting like a bunch of animals. I was like, you know, I would get them all jazzed up, right? I did that before final drill. I did that with one. That's about the only thing I really did with that kind of stuff. But, you know, it worked out. We didn't win final drill, but we were some hard motherfuckers.
Right. Did they win range? No.
I have the distinction of having two booger platoons. Two booger platoons. And I say booger, but my last cycle before I went on quota over to receiving, we weren't really a booger. It was only because that was a cycle. I don't know if you remember, I told you in the podcast, we were a two hat team for most of the cycle. Yeah. You know, my third hat decided to step to a recruit that he probably shouldn't have. So we kind of were at a disadvantage already. And we didn't do so well on initial drill. And the rifle range wasn't that good either because it was a two hat team. So we kind of got some points on there, but I say booger, but we weren't actually the booger platoon. I say booger because we were booger, but they were being easy on us because of that.
Yeah, but they were hard.
They were some them boys were some hard trained boys. So that was that platoon. I was pretty proud on that. I remember during graduation, there was at least, I don't know, I didn't have a lot of O3s in that platoon. Wasn't a lot. I remember that at graduation, the week before graduation, when their recruits can go on limbo and they're kind of walking people around and they get there, you know, they're walking with their dress coat folded, you know, looking all prop with all the other recruits looking at them, right? I remember there was about at least 10 or 15 recruits that came to me and want to know how they can switch to infantry.
Hell yeah.
I was like, I'm proud of that. I have no fucking idea how you do that, but that's freaking awesome. Talk to, hey, get to your unit, man. Talk to your recruiters. Call your recruiters. See if we can switch.
Yeah.
I don't know if the Marine Corps is going to allow that. I don't know, but Not it's not that we have a need of infantry, but you know, I remember my first the first song, the company first song, said he's never heard of that before. Recruits actually wanting to switch to infantry. And our senior was an infantry. He was just a hard motherfucker. He was just a hard, crusty dude. He wasn't infantry though, but he was hard.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you're talking about walking around. Man, I was telling somebody about boot camp. And I don't remember if it's like the first 2 weeks or it's full all of phase one when you got to wear sneakers, your Go-Fasters.
Go-Fasters, yeah.
And you look like a fucking idiot.
You look like a straight douchebag. Yep, straight up.
So I can only...
With your trouser legs rolled up because you can't wear boot bands yet.
Yeah, yeah. You just look like an absolute fucking idiot.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can only imagine that's part of... That's part of earning it, right? That, or what's the reason for that?
To get your feet ready for wearing boots.
Fuck.
Because if you notice before that, you wore boots, but you didn't wear them every day or all day long. Remember, you would swap out boots. Like if you were doing drill, you would put your boots on, but then you would take your boots off, and put your Go-Fasters back on. It was to train your feet.
Jesus. That's fucking, goddamn, dude. 20 years later. So that old saying, like I was today years old when I fucking learned that. That's pretty cool. Yeah. I was thinking it was just to make you look like a goober, you know, because once you hit third phase, then that's when you get the high end tight. Yeah, they shave you. They shave you. You earn it, right? Yeah. Like you've earned that.
Everything is by stage, and it's all by design because that's what they do. You know, it's an indoctrination. It's exactly what it is.
Right.
They're trying to turn you into a different person. Everything has its steps. Everything has its phases, and it's all by design. You know, I remember when I was a recruit, you know, the best thing for me is when we got, I think it was, I don't know, probably halfway through. I can't remember, but, you know, I wasn't a strong recruit. You know, I was just the Northern kid who was an asshole and tried to cheat everywhere I could. You know, just Senior Johnson wasn't looking. I'm doing fucking 40 kicks in a pit. He wasn't looking. My feet were straight up in the dirt, you know. That was me. But I remember, you know, when we got the name tapes. When we got our name tapes, one day we came back from, I don't know, somewhere, and our name tapes are on our footlocker.
Yeah.
So I saw Sylvester and then U.S. Marines. And that right there, I was like, man, I really want this shit now. And then we got our camis. Oh, man, we got our camis, man. Dude, if you had told me that I had hit the fucking lottery, like, I'm going to do it.
You know what? I forgot all about that. Like when we first got there, we didn't have name tapes and Marines on our camis, did we?
No, because you were a recruit. You weren't a Marine. You're a recruit.
Yeah.
That's why the Marine Corps is the only branch. I think I'll hit one of the podcasts. I think you guys are talking about this. Marine Corps is the only branch where once you sign, you are not a member. You're not a member yet. You're going to earn it. That's why you're a recruit. You know, if you're going to Army, you're a private, right? From the day one.
Yeah.
You know, Marine Corps, you're a recruit. We don't want you, but we don't know who you are yet. You're not a member.
The Marine Corps is like that even when you get out.
Yeah, it's depending on where you go. Yeah.
After I got out and I was back in St. Louis for a little bit, I was thinking like maybe I missed it a little, you know?
Everybody does.
And so I started talking. I went back to the recruiting state. I didn't know where the fuck to go, you know? Like, went back to the recruiting station, and the guy said, yeah, it's not going to be easy. He's like, it's the arrogance of the Marine Corps. You left them. You went back in? Good luck.
So I'm glad you said that, because everybody that I have talked to that has gotten out, at some point during their transition, tried to get back in, including me. I tried to get back in. I could have gone back in, but then it was kind of like I was at that, you know, I was at that junction of, now I really have a choice. Is this something I really want to do? And I saw a different path, right? You know, I could have gotten the waivers and all that other stuff. Everything was there, but everybody that I've talked to that I've gotten out had tried to get back in, because, you know, the transition's hard. It really is. You know, trying to go back to Mike is hard. Because you weren't Mike for 4 years, 4+ years. You weren't Mike. You know, you were Francis, right? Or you were a rank. You were only part of something. You weren't an individual. You get out, now you're on your own. You're an individual. You know?
Yeah.
People don't realize, you know, it's hard sleeping alone when you get out. It's hard. And this is going to sound, you know, a little weird to the people who don't get it. But when you're surrounded by, you know, your brothers for so many years, you know, it's hard. It's different, you know, to be in an apartment all by yourself and looking around and be like, oh, shit, I'm all alone here.
Yeah.
You know,
I love that you brought it up, you know, especially hearing it from you, being one of my senior guys, one of the guys I looked up to. You know, like guys like Bally, who, you know, became a first sergeant DI, you know, we're talking about you and he's like, this might sound weird, but I really looked up to him, you know, like when we're in Afghanistan, you know, so hearing you say it, you're like, you're alpha, you know, like you're a hard dude. So like hearing you say it, you know, for me, I've experienced the same thing when I went home, you know, when you go home on leave, you're like this God.
You're still a Marine.
Yeah. And everybody
you're still Francis. You're not Mike yet.
Yeah. And and everybody wants to see you and they want to make time to see you. They're going to come, you know, cause you're about to go to war. You just got home from war and you're this God. And then, yeah, exactly what you just said. When you get back home, you're another dude on the street. You're Mike and nobody gives a fuck.
Nobody cares where you were, what you did.
And it's tough, man. And for me, you know, like when we were in the barracks, you know, junior Marines, man, we went and got haircuts together. Yeah, you know, we went out to eat together. We went up to the PS. Everything.
You had your little clique that you went, you know, did your Black Ops at the Dirtwood or La Mirage. You know, you had your group, right? But
yeah,
the guys you didn't hang out with weren't your brothers, right?
Right.
You know, it really was a true family. You got your brothers, but they're all brothers. But yeah. He's not into the same things I am, right? So when it's our time, we go and hang out with our things. But everything is together. You're never alone, ever. Everything you do. You're with someone, you know? And I think, you know, I remember that. That was probably one of the biggest things, the transitions that I had was kind of coming again. I was in for a long time. I don't know how somebody like, you know, individual we were talking about earlier, right?
Yeah.
Be hitting, you know, 29 years when he hangs it up, right?
Yep.
Next year. You know, that kind of transition, but he wasn't 03 all the way through. You know, he hasn't been an 03 probably, shit, maybe 10, 12 years. But still being in that environment, it's not going to be easy. It's definitely not, you know, and it kind of makes you wonder, like, you know, what's the worst part? What's the worst part? Is it going in and going through it or is it getting out and trying to snap back? What's the hardest part, right?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think it's getting out. I think it's coming back. That is probably one of the hardest things I ever had to do is to be like living in Florida has been so great for me, mental health wise. And just, you know, you got Ramirez and Ramos and Rod, like all the R fucking guys, right? Roop, Remington, all the motherfuckers got the last name R. You got to move to Florida, I guess. But being around them, being able to hang out, it's been incredible for me. And yeah, like you said, when you get back, man, it was depressing as fuck. I fucking hated it.
Yeah, you know, it's tough. And I remember, you know, you brought up, you kind of making me think here. There was one episode you were talking about, you know, what did it do to your mother, right? Like, what was your mother worried about, right?
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that. And, you know, what my mother was worried about was different than what your mother was worried about. Because when I went in, there was no war, you know, she was, but then once things were popping off, the only thing she was really concerned about was, I think she was more concerned, less concerned about me coming home in a box than me coming home all fucked up. Because she's seen that, right? I mean, my father, she went through that with my father. She went through that with her father. And seeing what it does to a person, I think that's the one thing that scared her the most was, you know, seeing me, and you know, she didn't really know what I was doing until I think like the last deployment. Up until that time, she had no idea. Like I didn't come home. You know, I didn't really talk that much. You know, inform my family what was going on. And I was like, hey, yeah, I'm coming home. We'll be home for like a week or two. It was the pre-deployment before I went to as a pre-deployment for Iraq. That's when I transitioned to 1-6.
Yeah.
And And she's like, oh, well, why are you coming home? I was like, yeah, we're deploying to Iraq. I just kind of said it. She's like, oh, you're going to Iraq? I was like, well, yeah. And she's like, I'm infantry. That's what I do. And I told her, I was like, I just actually came back from Afghanistan like a month ago. And she's like, what? What are you talking about? Like, I didn't know you were doing any of this. I guess I didn't tell you. I'm sorry. And from that on, her mentality kind of changed. And I think that's what she was worried about. When I heard that episode, I kind of brought it back a little bit. You know, I think that's the biggest thing she was concerned about. Not me coming home in a box, me coming home all fucked up. Right.
That's a great point. Yeah. And, you know, see, my mom, right? I was the first Marine in my family, still the only Marine.
Me too.
My dad didn't serve, but my grandfather and all of his brothers did. So my mom was really never around anybody to know how much it fucks you up. So her concern probably was, I was going to get myself killed. Mike's going to go do something stupid. And it's funny.
He's going to be a hero.
Right. He's going to do something crazy. And, you know, I was talking to Strong one night, and he was telling me about something that happened when we were in Iraq. And he talked to his mom a couple days later, and she had had this crazy feeling, and something crazy had just happened. And then the same thing happened to me. I had a crazy moment in Iraq, and my mom had told me that, like, she refused to go home that day from work because she, like, knew there was going to be somebody standing there in dress blues.
They're going to be waiting there, yeah.
And, you know, it makes me think, you know, when we're over there, we're so focused on what we're doing and staying alive and keeping our buddies alive that we don't really ever think about what our family is going through back home.
No idea.
They went through some shit, too.
Yeah, they did, you know. And I haven't talked to my mother about it. Maybe I should. I don't know. It's been a while. But, you know, I kind of because I can see why she would be that way, because, you know, my father coming back from Vietnam didn't have the support that we have.
Yeah.
You know, he had to do it all himself. Well, and then with her. And, you know, it was a complete goat rope. And, you know, she still kind of had that feeling like, hey, he's going to come back. He's not going to have support. He's, you know, he's going to be making some bad decisions. He's going to think he's still there. You know, who knows, right? You know, I'm glad things have changed and seems there's a lot more support. But it's this right here, you know. Vietnam guys, you know, they would if they still communicated, it was like they were back in again. And they kind of kept, you know, they kept that mindset, you know. Whereas now, the guys coming back now, you know, we can sit and we can talk just like regular people, you know, not like Marines, right? Which helps.
Yeah, and plus, even when we're not talking because of things like Facebook, yeah, I mean, there's dude, and I don't know how many dudes I'm friends with that I don't talk to, right. But you see their pictures and posts and the different things they're doing. And, you know, you just get to still, you like you said, we don't have to interact as Marines. We share our lives with one another. We get to keep in touch. And That was the whole reason I ever got on Facebook in the first place. Is I remember, like, Weitzel and Stanker, they're like, hey, man, these guys are on here sharing pictures from the shit we did. Like, you need to get on here. I'm like, all right, I'll check it out.
I got on there because they shut down MySpace.
Yeah, that too.
MySpace. Remember MySpace? That's why I was like, it's on Facebook now. The fuck is this? I
guess I'll get Tom, out of here. Man.
I just built my MySpace page. Like, what the fuck?
I did all the fancy coding and shit myself.
Shit, I had a great music, I had a good background.
But then after you got out, but you got a master's, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. To a grad program. I didn't complete it, but I got a graduate certificate.
Yeah. So you went, and that's such a cool thing, man, because I Weitzel, Hunter, you know, they both went to college first. Wasn't really for them. Joined the Marine Corps. And, you know, those dudes were pretty instrumental in getting me into college because I went straight from military school. I went from military school, boom. We graduated in December. I was gone in February. Like, fucking send me. Let's go.
You're a program for early. Shit.
I thought I was, man. I thought, let me tell you, I'm not going to lie. When I got to Paris Island, I thought I was going to be some hot shit. And
I went to military school, sir. Good. I'm sure you did.
I knew how to drill. Man, I knew how to about face. Get the fuck out of here. What are you going to teach me?
Recruit ROTC. Good. Gonna have fun with you.
Yeah, no, I wanted that guide spot right off the bus.
I tried to stay away from that as much as I could.
Yeah. I was stupid motivated. Yeah. Stupid motivated.
But after the Dylan struggle, I always gave the guide the kid, like, you know, had nothing to do with his background, like where he went to school or was a military or ROTC. ROTC fuckers, like, they was in the back, man. Get the fuck away from me. You know, those guys, the guide was always a hard, almost like the thumper. Like, I'd be like, guide, fix these motherfuckers right now. And he would say, hey, man, he'd be like a little freaking little mini drill instructor. That's what I always picked as a guy, you know, but we always had to rotate it too. We did. That's something that the Marine Corps or, you know, the regiment would always kind of put on. You got to rotate your guide around. You don't want to keep the same guy. So sometimes we were trying to find, hey, we're going to get rid of the guide this week. Find something that he fucked up so we can fire him. And then we got to promote, find somebody who did something good so we can promote them. One guy, we gave him a guide because he made his rack really good. It was like the tightest rack. That's a great fucking rack, recruit. Guide! Get him the fucking guide on. You're fired. But it was all by design. We just kind of rotated, right? Because it was a leadership position. We tried to build that leadership. But, I mean, ROTC, military school, we had one kid that came through. He was old as dirt, number one. He was like 20-something years in the Navy. And he always wanted to be a Marine. And he wanted to be a guide. I'm like, get the fuck away from me. He looked like, I mean, the kid was hard. Well, the guy, he was older than me. He was a grown man. He was a hard fucking dude. But he looked like somebody that was probably picked on a lot in high school. He just had that look, right? But he did like 20-something years in the Navy. And then he always wanted to be a Marine. So he just, I'm going to just do 4 years in the Marine Corps. That kid had a stack bigger than me at the time, too. It was Nick. So,
yeah.
Oh, man. I had to go get his fucking ribbons, like for drill, for final drill, and putting the ribbons on. I was like, give me a list of your fucking. I was like, what the fuck? You got a Navy comm? What the fuck you got a Navy comm for? What the fuck? Shit. You know, I'm going to go to PX and buy all these ribbons for you.
Jesus.
Yeah, he wanted to be a guide, and I don't want him to do it. I was a heavy. I don't want him to do it. This crew doesn't want to be the guide. Fuck you. Get the fuck out of here. Not being the guide.
Would you guys, what was the thought of guys that came from other branches?
He was the only one I had. He was the only one. Yeah. Most of the ones that, usually what I've seen in my career, in my time, is I served a lot of people who, when they got out, they went on.
You know, Strong and I were talking about that too. Like, why the, you know, not to take shots at anybody, but I that's not something I couldn't go from being a Marine to, I know you're still a Marine, but just being in the Army.
It's easier. That's what they think. And plus, you know, us as infantry don't realize, and I'm not running down Ranger school because I know it's tough, but Marines can do very well at Ranger school.
Because
it's something that we're used to. We're used to the environment. Now, are we going to be, you know, fucking, you know, top graduate? No. But Marines, as a general, will be able to pass Ranger school, no problem. So a lot of guys come in, like most of the guys that went Army, they went SF. They went Army, FS, you know, Ranger, you know, ODA. They went through that whole, that path. But the Marine Corps at the time didn't really have that, you know?
Yeah.
They had, you know, We had no seat at the table. You know, there was no MARSOC.
Right.
There was Force Recon, but Force Recon was like the bastard stepchild of the SEALs, you know? Mm-hmm. And they usually just, you know, they sat behind the SEALs. They didn't have a seat at the table. So, you know, a lot of guys wanted to go the Special Forces route. You know, they decided the Army was the best route.
That's a good point. Yeah. I didn't really think of that, but yeah, it was tough to... I do remember going through, if you were an 03 with like a plus 50 ASVAB score, then they would let you go for swim qual 1, right? Because everybody else just had to go through 4, pass 4.
At Paris Island.
Paris Island.
Okay.
Yeah. If you made 4, you're good to go. And then if you were an 03, and recon eligible, they would let you go for 1. And I went for 1. I tell you, well, anybody, man, the motherfuckers, that's not, Paris Island is not the place to try to pass one. No. One.
Who the fuck told you that? I would have been like, nope, I'll wait till I get to the fleet, bro. You ain't drowning my ass.
The greatest thing I experienced, though, through all of my suffering on that day of Swim Qual 1 was the poor motherfuckers who, like, they were helicopter gunners. And because they were on a helicopter, in order to keep their MOS, they had to pass Swim Qual 1. And those kids were just being thrashed because they had to pass it.
Yeah, I don't know. When I was, I remember, you know, I wasn't part of that. You know, because I wasn't, usually the McQuist guys, you know, combat water survival guys, they were the ones that were doing those courses. You know, I'd be like, hey, give me my threes and fours. Let's go, bitches. We can form up. But the old threes, they did stay because you had to be at least, I think they would let them go all the way up, but you had to be at least an S3, if I remember correctly, for old three, just to pass swim qual. You had to be an S3 before you can move on, if you're in old three. But there was quite a few kids in a few of my platoons who stayed, and they went all the way up to S1, that were infantry.
Yeah.
I didn't have a lot of aviation guys, but that I remember. There was another MOS. I forgot what the hell it was. And there was one kid, and the drill instructors knew everybody's MOS, but I didn't, like, know it by heart, right? I didn't know half of these fucking kids. The only ones I really knew were the old threes.
Right.
And there was this one kid, I had him in formation. I'm like, hey, he has to stay. He has to qual. I was like, what the fuck? He's not a fucking old three. Like, no, I forgot. It's some MOS. I forgot what it was. But he had a qual all the way up to S1. So I forgot what it was, but maybe it was something aviation. I don't know. But we didn't have a lot of, you know, aviation in my mind. I had a lot of fucking, you know, I had a band member. I had combat fucking seamstress. Cooks, a lot of motor T when I was a drill instructor, and infantry.
Yeah. Another very interesting moment I remember on Paris Island, which I don't know how often this happens. Maybe you can, you know, shine some light on this. We were out of the rifle range for the 2 weeks, and we got bussed back somewhere to Mainside because they were interviewing for Yankee White. And I remember being in a room. I guess you had to be in 03 with a plus 50 ASVAB.
I don't know what the ASVAB requirements were, but I know there was a PFT requirement. There might have been an ASVAB requirement, but definitely 03. And there was also a height requirement too for certain roles within Yankee White.
Okay.
Yeah, because at 8th and I, because, you know, one of the individuals we were talking about earlier was he got, that's where he got pulled, I think. It was either or at SOI for silent drill. So 8th and I. And everybody has to be the same height. And for Yankee White, if you're going to do the details where, you know, you're at Marine One, or if you're, you know, outside the White House, you have to be a certain height. If you're at, like, Camp David or one of those other, you know, security positions, that there really isn't a height requirement, but there is other requirements for that. And I remember the screener was coming through. They did it for every dump. The screener would come through and start looking at record books and things like that. Yeah. So
remember.
Obviously, you didn't get pulled for that.
So, you know, I didn't know what was going on. I just got on a bus. I was told to get on a bus. We went back to Mainside. And I remember being in the room, and the first question the guy asked was, who here's ever had a parking ticket? And I'm like, well, this is going to be hard. Like, I'm not passing this test. And out of all the O3s on Paris Island at that time, which I don't know how many given recruits there typically were at a time, especially O3s, there was one dude that made it. He was from my platoon. His name was Grassadino. Like, I still fucking remember that shit to this day. Yeah. He's the only dude on Paris Island that made the qualification for, like, to go through.
Yeah, it's pretty tough, especially for Yankee White. It's pretty tough because of the background requirements. Like, they want to know your first grade teacher, your kindergarten. Yeah. Like, hey, did you ever color outside the lines? Oh, man, you're upside, man. You fucked. You ain't going. It's pretty stringent what they do. But I remember the screener would come through. Like, oh, here comes the fucking screener again. it was almost like a little bit of a time off for us too. Because hey, I'll take them back, and they're in there. You guys were in there for a little while. I'm outside, you know, smoking Newports, fucking chilling. You know, it's like time off.
Yep, that was kind of my. It was a little break. It was a little break away from whatever the hell chaos was going on. I don't know what it was about those shooters' barracks, but it was.
You know they're haunted, right?
They, nobody ever told me that, but.
Oh, they were fucking haunted, trust me.
Yeah.
They were fucking haunted. Oh, yeah.
I just had uneasy feelings being in those buildings, man.
Those barracks go back to Korea.
Really?
Well, I mean, at the time they did. They might have knocked them down by now. Because I know they kind of reorganized Paris Island. Like, their battalion is no longer out in the middle of nowhere. It's kind of closer to the main side, so you can hear people screaming. But those barracks out there, man, they were a trip. They were a trip. I got some stories I can tell you about those barracks. Not going to say it out here, though.
Well, yeah, we'll talk about it offline.
It was good. It was good training. It was good training for the recruits.
Yeah, I feel like intensity might have picked up a little bit because we were further away.
Yeah, but not that, you know, everybody says, we're outside the house now, right? We're away from daddy now. We were only like 5 blocks. I mean, they made it sound like we're on the moon. We weren't that far away, you know, from you know, Paris Island's not that big, you know?
Yeah.
And you might think you were far away, but you really weren't. You really weren't that far away. You were like a mile. That's about it.
All right.
And you know, it's all part of the psyche. You want to make the recruits think that, hey, the drone strike, we're out here in Manila. No, they can't hear us scream. You know, senior's not going to come out here. You know, company gone, series come in, and they're all back in the company office. We're out here all by ourselves. He's going to fuck us up. No, they were all there. They were all there. But those barracks were a trip, though. Those barracks were a trip.
Yeah.
And they would tell us, hey, take it easy on the recruits, because now, you know, we don't want no Goma Pyle situations going on. So,
yeah.
Live rounds, you know, some recruit is a little bit fucking shaky, you know, starts, you know, loses his marble somehow or whatever. You know, hey, we got to relax a little bit. Relax a little bit. And we did. You know, you notice your drone strike didn't kick too much stress when you had the gun in your hand. You had that rifle on the line. You know, there wasn't a lot of stress going on. But back at the house, there was some stress kicking it.
Yeah, I'll say definitely qual week. Qual week wasn't that bad. Grass week, man, that was the worst fucking thing I ever experienced.
Grass week is a mind fuck because we want to. The whole idea is they want you to be able to apply the fundamentals under stress.
Yeah. And
if you're just looking at a snap-in barrel, you know, under stress, you know, it'll be muscle memory, right? All of those fundamentals will be muscle memory. So when you go down range. But, you know, you got to keep one thing in mind. You know, the drill instructors are scored. So if you have a bunch of kids that go unk or don't qualify, that's bad on the drill instructors. So we want to leave it the fuck alone. Because we want you to fucking qualify.
I was talking to an Army buddy today because we were talking about the differences in qualifications. And it's funny because you were talking about, you know, at the top of this podcast, you were talking about always trying to, you know, like if you're not cheating, you're not trying. Yeah. And I was telling him about how from the 200, it was 5 standing, 5 kneeling, 5 sitting. And I said, you know, for some people, sometimes it might have turned into 3 standing, you know, 5 kneeling, 7 sitting. Might have.
Yeah, well, those things happen.
Those things happen. They happen to the best of us.
You know, sometimes, you know, holes ended up on the target that weren't put there by a bullet too. So
yeah, or from another shooter.
Hey, benefit goes to the target, right? Hey,
right. Look,
counting. Hey, there's 6 shots on here. Take the 6 highest. You know, we don't care where that we don't care where that 6th one came from. Just take the 5 highest ones. Right? Yeah. Hey, if somebody was shooting on somebody else's target, I guess they're fucked. Yeah, but you know.
Pulling pits, man. Pulling pits was a blast in boot camp.
I got in trouble. I got in trouble my first cycle in the pits. That's where I got when I first time I got hemmed up at Paris Island was on the rifle range.
I could see it. The rifle range is definitely an interesting place.
Well, in the pits, there's nobody down there. You're truly alone. It's yeah. just the drill instructors. Nobody's down there. It's just you and the drill instructor. So, you know, they usually put all the third hats down there. It was, man, it was some training going on. There was some training going on.
Not that I think that this is a bad thing. It was a thing that I experienced that I happened. And the drill instructor, he was also from St. Louis. That came out when we were at the rifle range because he was doing mail and he saw my mail.
Fucking talking to you? Shit.
And so he, yeah, he pulled me aside and, you know, in a low conversational tone, he had me up against the wall. And yeah, he was a cool dude. He was probably one of my favorite. But I remember holding on like the knuckle of my finger, the bayonet clip, fully extended, holding that fucking rifle out on the knuckle of my finger. I don't know how long I did it, but I know however long I did it, it was longer than I thought that I could have done it. Uh-huh. It's just amazing the things that you can, the mind, how powerful it is.
I'm not going to comment on that, but that happened too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, too. Like I said, it was to me.
I don't know who he is, and I don't want to get him in trouble. So, yeah. But yeah, things like that happened down there in the pits. There was training was ongoing.
Yeah. Training was
ongoing. And the good thing is we don't scream. Everything was quiet. Because if you had a bunch of shit come from the pits and you got the RSO down there or the, you know, the gunning would go down there. So what the hell's going on? So everything was quiet. But recruits were sweating, you know, yeah. You weren't screaming down there.
I'll say anything that I experienced, man, was good training. I don't think I experienced anything that, you know, that I would ever classify as hazing or abusive or wrong. You know, anything that I experienced, yeah, I could honestly, truthfully.
Because the people that would classify it that way don't get it.
Yeah, no, you're right. There's people that are probably like, oh my God, they made you stand holding your rifle with your fucking knuckle. You know, I probably did something fucking stupid and deserved it.
Well, I mean, Dan, remember the last podcast I told you that, you know, if, you know, there were things happen that had zero value. Training has to have value. So if the recruits are being doing something, if they're being, you know, forced into some kind of action, there needs to be value to it. And you know, sometimes things happen that there was zero value. We kind of touched on the last episode, but there was zero value. Zero training value to what you just had those recruits do. Things like that.
I feel like anything hard that I went through or was challenged with, like that example there, it was one of those things. It showed me how much stronger I was than I realized I was. Yeah. You know, that we can go through more than we think that we can. And, you know, I don't know if you ever do it, man, but sometimes I look back. You know, like the Death March, Afghanistan. Like, how the fuck did we do that shit?
I think I had a heart attack on that one, if I remember correctly. I think I did. After that, I got, you know, a bolt and pulled me in to the BS. I had me hooked up to the EKG and everything. I think I had a heart attack.
So, you can't be climbing those mountains smoking them Newports.
Well, what it was, I remember very distinctly, I was screaming at someone. And I just winded myself because I was screaming at someone. Next thing you know, I'm carrying two packs and, you know, I'm like, nah, man, I don't know if I could fucking do this. And I met one of the breaks we stopped at. And I was like, Doc, something's going on here, bro. You're going to take care of this. Something's going on. He's like, what the fuck you want me to do? I don't know. So I'm not feeling right, bro. Something's going on right here. And we got back and, you know, freaking Bowen's like, yeah, Sylvester's humping on one ventricle. You better get him. Fucking over to EKG fucking now. Yeah, I think I had a heart attack on that one. Yeah, that was rough.
Yeah. But yeah, it was great, man. Great.
I did the same thing on the run. Remember when we were leaving Salerno and we did that little fucking boat run around the camp?
Yeah.
Remember that shit? We were fucking like singing. Man, they had me out there for like 2 miles singing Cadence. And by that, I was gassed. I was fucking gassed. I was like, I think I was in the open to them. I ended up in weapons. I'm like, what the? I'm not even with my platoon. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to run with y'all. I guess I just fell out of my shit. So I kept singing. I'm like, somebody going to come out here or what? Right. Me, fucking 2 miles later.
Nah, man.
Elevation. I think I gassed myself.
Yeah, we were a little high up. Now, you know, we learned better than to volunteer ourselves for anything.
I kept calling people out, and they were like, no. I'm like, y'all a bunch of bitches. I remember I said that. I can't do it. Two soldiers, I'm not going to say who they are. But I called them both out, and they were like, I'm like, y'all a bunch of bitches. I got it. And I just fucking kept going.
Yep.
And then I just stopped. I was like, I can't do it anymore. I'm done.
Yeah, dude, it was a great time, man. Like, looking back, the stories we have, right. You know, dude, I'm so, you know, all the dudes I'm so happy to know and have relationships with. And, you know, it's weird, man. It's one of those things, you know, like we've kind of gone our separate ways through life and everything. And 20 years here we are linking back up later, telling stories. And, you know, I'm super thankful for it. I'm super appreciative, you know, for you to come on and be part of this. Be part of this, man. Everybody loves it. Everybody appreciates it very much.
Yeah, and I like hearing some of the other perspectives too, right? I know you had Talbot on and Gaddis. I don't think I heard that one yet. I kind of fell off for a few weeks and I was trying to get caught back up, but you know, listening to Strong and listening to some of his insight, you know, Mr. Smarty Pants that he is.
Yeah, dude. That guy, I fuck with him. I wish I had could pull up the text. He knows so much.
Like, he sits in a room and just reads. Like, bro, like,
yeah,
you know all this shit.
I told him, I was fucking with him because I'll ask him a question and he knows, like, verbatim, sometimes out of the manual. Uh-huh. And I was texting him and I said, you know, hey, Gunny. Yeah, because that's kind of, you know, his master sergeant, but that's what I knew him as. I said, hey, Gunny, why do they call it a dog target? And then I texted back, well, you see, Francis, in 1817, after the Barbary Pirate Wars, whenever they were attacked by dogs in Tripoli. And he's like, fuck you. But he would pull some shit like that, man. He probably knows why that fucking target's called a dog target.
I'm sure he does.
I don't.
Just hearing that, and I kind of knew that about him. Maybe you guys didn't. But, you know, because I had an interaction with him back then.
Yeah.
That if we needed to recite a manual, we would just look over at him. Hey, Strong, what am I going to put in my op order from the manual on this? And he'd be like, oh, you're going to put, you know, the, oh, okay. You know?
Yeah.
Verbatim, I got to put in, you know, this thing or something, right? He knew exactly what it was. We were just going to, but I knew that about him. You know, maybe you guys didn't know that, but, you know, him and some of the other guys, it's good. I think it is, you know, it kind of helps put some levity to it, but also it kind of snaps you back in a little bit so you can relax. Right. And, you know, maybe some things you forgot about, you know, and, you know, now yeah. you get a little bit more different perspective on the, maybe you were feeling at that time. So, you know, it's good. I think, you know, it'd be good, you know, if we can get other people on. I know you would more than willing to do it, you know, other branches, you know, maybe other Marine units, you know, kind of talk about their experiences and things like that. You know, I think either way, it's going to be a great thing all around.
Yeah, we appreciate it, man. And we definitely are going to be, we have been reaching out to some other people. We're going to get some, we're going to vary it up, branch away from 3-6 a little bit.
You got the actors on, you know, from, what was that movie? Like two guys from the actors.
The Pacific,
yes. I didn't see it. Sorry. I heard it. I heard the podcast. Great guys.
They are.
So you're getting that perspective. You know, hey, I kind of felt like a Marine.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but you weren't. I'm glad you felt like it, but you weren't. Yeah. But I also want to hear your perspective, though. You know, I wanted to hear that, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely interesting. Well, man, we could go all night. We got to wrap up. Thanks again for making the time this Friday night to come on. And we're going to do it again. We'll get some more people, but maybe in a month or so, we'll do it again.
Yeah.
Well, all right, everybody. Well, thanks again for listening to Tales for the Corps here with Sergeant Michael Sylvester. And until next time, Semper Fi.